is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey Hoopheads, this December our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering $1,000 off and two free basketballs with a Dr. Dish home purchase. Plus, all their commercial models are $2,500 off this month. Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. You can also check out their holiday gift guide if you're shopping for the ball player in your life.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Schultz, assistant men's basketball coach at Center College, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are going to be talking a hodgepodge of NBA tonight. We're going to kind of jump around the league and talk about some of the main storylines that have come out over the last couple days and week. And we're going to obviously talk some Cavs. It's been a pretty good week for the Cavaliers, and we'll get to that, I guess, after you got my
win shares.
Shares. All right,
yeah.
I'm ready.
Yeah, well, the win shares. So I said that we were going to stay in the Eastern Conference a lot, Mike, because I've been loading up on the Western Conference. But with the pending sale of the Phoenix Suns, I figured this was an opportune time to look at the Phoenix Suns' top win share players.
All right.
So that's where we're going.
So we're going with... We're going with the Phoenix Suns. So let's see. Steve Nash.
Steve Nash is number three.
Number three. Barkley, was he there long enough to qualify for the top five?
He's 11.
Yeah, figured he wasn't there long enough. Dan Marley.
Dan Marley is nine.
Nine. Let's see. Whew. Nash is what, three, you said?
Yeah, Nash is three.
Amari Stoudemire?
He's number five.
All right, so got two of the top five. Could there be anybody else from the 7 seconds or less?
Oh, yeah, here? There is.
There is. Sean Marion?
He's number one, Mike.
Really?
He is number one.
I guess longevity for the Matrix. So I got three of the top five now. Ooh, man. Now it gets tough because now you're going back in time. Alvin Adams?
Alvin Adams, number four. I have to say, I never would have known who that guy was.
Okay. All right. So I got somebody that you had never even heard of. So I need one more.
Yeah, he's a mayor.
Kevin Johnson. That's
easy. There
you
go, number two.
Look at that. I did pretty well. I was right about to go there because I was just going through and trying to think. My Rolodex was just getting to KJ. So I probably got that. That was probably the easiest one. I probably got that one in the least amount of guesses. And I don't think I didn't pick anybody who wasn't on the list, right?
No, you didn't. I'll finish out the top 12 for you. Walter Davis was six.
Okay. That should have been one that came
Dick
to me.
Dick Van Arsdale is seven.
Okay. Okay.
Number eight, his son played for us. He played for us, Larry Nance. Okay. Yep. Number 10, Paul Westfall. And number 12, he was a coach for them a few years ago.
He was a coach for the Phoenix
Suns? He also played for Utah.
played for Utah.
Jeff Hornacek.
Jeff Hornacek. All right.
There you go.
It's a pretty good list. Spurs, or the Suns got a pretty good list there.
Yeah.
No J. Kidd, huh?
No J. Kidd.
Wasn't there long enough.
No. He wasn't there.
Wasn't there long enough. I feel pretty good. That was good.
I'm proud of you,
Mike. Every one of my guesses was on the top 12. Maybe we're in for a good podcast tonight.
We'll see. We'll see about that. All right. So now that we've talked about the wind shears for the Phoenix Suns, let's talk about the new owner of the Phoenix Suns. And I'll be honest with you when I say I don't really know much about this guy. I know he's a mortgage lender, kind of in the same vein as Dan Gilbert. He purchased the Suns and the Mercury for a record price of $4 billion. Ishbia, his name is... Matt Ishbia. His brother, Justin, is going to be a founding partner in Shore Capital. Who is a founding partner in Shore Capital? Will make a significant investment and serve as an alternate governor. I read that this is going to happen relatively quickly. I mean, the teams all want him out. Anyway, they want Sarver out and not to be associated with the NBA. So, I mean, I'm sure it's going to get pushed through as quickly as possible, almost like how the Donald Sterling thing got pushed through. Other than that, Mike, I don't really have much to add to this. I don't know if you have anything to add.
Obviously, a good thing for the league if they can move it forward. Just like you, I can't claim to have much knowledge about Matt Ishbia and his business dealings or his company. I know that from reading the article that he was a walk-on at Michigan State and still is connected to that program at one point. I think he gave a $32 million donation to the Michigan State basketball program. Says he's still close with Tom Izzo. So, yeah, I would guess $32 million would probably help to keep that relationship pretty close. But from an NBA standpoint, right, the faster they can get Sarver out the door, the faster and the better they can put that thing in the rearview mirror. I know that there was – I don't know if you saw it, but there was another article – this week on ESPN.com talking about the fact that some of the things that Sarver did and just the culture that he promoted, there was a trickle-down effect that executives in the Suns organization, there are people, employees that said that Sarver sort of led this toxic culture, that it wasn't just Sarver, that there were other incidences with other top-ranking executives in terms of how they treated women, specifically women that were pregnant or returning from pregnancy. And there was just a couple other things in there. And so I think from a league standpoint, they want to try to get this guy out as quickly as possible, get this transaction finalized and move on. I think it's pretty incredible that you're talking about $4 billion for this franchise. The highest previous sale was, I believe, the Nets, which was in 2019, Joe Tsai, $2.35 billion. I know you think back to when Ballmer bought the Clippers and $2 billion, and everybody was kind of like, holy cow, like that is insane. It would be interesting. I don't have it in front of me, but it would be interesting to go back and look at what each one of the franchises in the league was purchased for, and then look with the idea that, now look, Phoenix is a very desirable franchise in a great location and a place that, if you get it right, you should be able to attract free agents and you should be able to win there. But I don't care what franchise you own. You're talking now, every franchise is probably north of $2 billion, right? I don't think you could buy an NBA franchise for less than $2 billion at this point.
I would agree. All right. So I'm trying to do some research, Mike. So I'll try to pull up those numbers for you here in a second.
Okay. But I just think whatever it is, you're not selling a franchise. Maybe it's $3 billion. I mean, I don't know what the lowest market cost would be for any of the franchises, but regardless, you're talking about a pretty good appreciation on your product. And it'll be interesting to see if any of this has impact on the collective bargaining agreement. Not that it's going to have big implications, but certainly if you're the players and you're looking around, you're saying to yourself in that negotiation, these owners just made whatever. I mean, obviously, each owner is not making this money because it's paper money until you actually sell the team. But still, the value of these franchises continues to go up and up and up and up and up.
And I would think that that would give the players a little bit of leverage to say, hey, the franchise valuations are going through the roof. We need to be able to get a piece of some of that profit in this next collective bargaining agreement. So we'll see what happens. It should be interesting.
Yeah. All right. So here we go. Josiah bought the – this is before this trade, this deal went through. Josiah bought the Nets for $3.3 billion in 2019. Tillman Fertitta bought the Rockets for $2.2 billion. Ballmer was just $2 billion. Ryan Smith bought the Jazz for $1.6 billion back in 2020. Minnesota Timberwolves were 1.5. The Raptors were Raptors was 1.3 in 2011. So,
I don't think you're getting in for less than two. Let's put it that way. I don't care what franchise, what market you're in. You're not getting in.
I agree.
For less than $2 billion at this point, I can't see possibly where that would happen. So. Good time to be an NBA owner. Good time to be an NBA owner. I know. I don't know if you listened. Did you listen at all to, I guess it was a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, that Winhurst was talking about possible expansion and just the fact that trying to basically parse out whether or not, from an owner's perspective, whether or not it's worth it to bring in the sale of those franchises and bring in that money right up front versus having to split the pie 32 ways instead of 30 ways. It was just interesting. And then he was also talking about how there was a big push to within the league to really, really consider going to Mexico City with one of the franchises. Obviously, it's been talked about, and I think most people have thought and continue to think that the two most likely locations are Vegas and Seattle. But Winhurst was saying that there was a lot of buzz, a lot of talk, and a lot of people advocating within the league that Mexico City was at some point definitely going to be on their radar as far as next place to expand. I just can't see where you already think about the disadvantages that the Raptors have. And you think about the Vancouver Grizzlies and the fact that you couldn't make it there. Vancouver, I don't know if you've ever been there, but I've been there once and that city's just, I mean, it's beautiful.
And I was there because that's where we left for my honeymoon. We went on a cruise for my honeymoon. So there,
I mean, there. Vancouver was awesome. I just, the city was incredible, and the fact that you couldn't get the league to really work there. So there's guys that obviously don't want to go and play in Canada. I would assume that there would be even more objections to having to live and play in Mexico City, just from a perception standpoint. So I think that expanding anywhere into a foreign country for any of these leagues, although it sounds good, I think logistically and just from a competitive balance standpoint and whether or not you can really attract free agents to go and live in these places, I'm not sure that that's really something that the league wants to get into. I mean, the league might want to get into it, but I think the actual execution of it is going to be a lot harder than just saying, hey, we want to go to Mexico City, because I just don't think players are going to want to go there. And that's a detriment. The league can't have a situation where already you have the small market, large market, you have the coasts versus the Midwest, you have the cold weather cities versus warm weather cities. There's so many things already inherently built in that can make it easy for one franchise and difficult for another. And to me, you add in a foreign country, you add going to Mexico where, I mean, let's face it, you compare Mexico to Canada or the U.S., not quite as stable of an environment, and it just doesn't seem like you could get players consistently to want to go and live in Mexico City. Plus, you figure the travel in and out of there. I don't see that happening, especially when you have Vegas and Seattle sitting here in the U.S. sort of prime for these franchises. So it'll be interesting to see if and when the league expands. I guess you would make the argument that from a talent standpoint, the league's probably never been in a better place. It's probably ready for expansion when it comes to the talent base that they have, but it'll be interesting to see whether or not those owners want to split that revenue 32 ways instead of 30 ways. And obviously they bring in the money up front. So you figure with the sale of this franchise for $4 billion, franchises that are expansion teams have got to be going in the neighborhood of that, right? I mean, they got to be close yep. to that price point. So you're talking about, if you have two of them, you're talking about a $6 to $8 billion infusion of cash into the owner's pocket, which comes in today. It's not money that you have to wait 10 years for the next TV contract or whatever, that money trickles in. But you are giving it up in perpetuity when you let another franchise in the door. So it'll be interesting to see. I think at some point it's inevitable that the league's going to expand. When that
it's for sure going to expand, Mike. It's going to for sure expand.
When that happens, I'm not sure, but at some point for sure.
If it's not going to Seattle, I'm going to throw a hissy fit.
Okay. The Sonics, bringing back the Sonics, whenever I see a Sonics uniform or I'm looking through 70 Sports or whatever on Twitter and you see something related to the Supersonics, I always miss the Sonics. It seems strange that the Sonics aren't around anymore.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so the next thing we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about the Cavs briefly. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but they're playing really well, Mike. Much better than they were last week. We were a little down on them last week. I'm back up, Mike.
You're back in.
Well, listen, we're playing at home. We got to keep playing at home.
Yeah, as long as you play at home, things look pretty good. I mean, they had two ugly wins at home that it was a struggle against two teams that they probably should have handled without much difficulty, but the Mavericks without Luka and then the Pacers, those two games, the Pacers, they had to have a huge comeback in the fourth quarter, which they had and they put together. But I guess the thing is that you have to look at it and say you won those two games, which are two games that you easily could have folded, you easily could have lost. And the fact that they were able to come back and win them. And then obviously last night they played the Jazz. And they shoot the ball really well. They shot it poorly against the Mavericks and against the Pacers for the first three quarters. They just didn't shoot the ball well. And if they don't shoot the ball well, when you figure the volume of shots that Mitchell and Garland are going to take, chances are you're going to have a hard time winning. And that was the case in those two games that they squeaked out in the fourth quarter. But when this team shoots the ball well, they're going to be really hard to beat. And I know we've talked a lot on the pod about Mobley and kind of where he is, but you're starting to see a little bit of the vision of what Evan Mobley can be. He hit the two big threes in both of those games against the Pacers and against the Mavericks, two corner threes in big moments. And I don't know about you, but I've noticed in the last 3, 4, 5 games that he's been a lot more solid with the ball, putting it on the floor. Like, he's not getting it poked away. He's able to get around guys. Still lacks a little bit of strength sometimes finishing, but his ability to pass the ball, I can't wait until he becomes fully developed as an offensive player, because his passing is just so good. I mean, his vision, his chemistry with Jared Allen, and just the way he sees guys, he catches it at the foul line and he turns and he already knows where he's going with the ball, whether that's to a guy diving to the rim or whether he's spraying it out to a corner shooter or a guy in the wing. He just already is reading the game at a really, really high level. It's been fun to watch. And I know that at the beginning of the season, I was saying there's something not there. And I don't know if it was the lingering effects of that ankle injury that he had during training camp. And he's still on this team. I think if you took Donovan Mitchell off this team, I think you'd see his scoring go up from where it is now. He's averaging like 15 a game, which is basically what he averaged last year. But you look at the number of opportunities he gets to shoot the ball. When you have two pretty high volume shooters, scorers in the backcourt of Mitchell and Garland, he's just not getting a ton of opportunities, but he takes advantage of everything that he has. And he's been really, really good. And obviously it goes without saying how good Mitchell continues to be. And Garland, I think, is in the ideal role for him, where he's a creator. He can still score, but you can take advantage of his passing. And this team's good. They got the number one point differential in the league right now. And typically, if you're a team that has the number one point differential in the league, then you are a team that's right there when it comes to talking about winning the NBA title. Now, maybe you don't win it, but you're definitely in the discussion, the short list of contenders. And the more you watch this team, the more it feels like the defense is real because of Allen and Mobley. And offensively, the backcourt can generate baskets. If you get Mobley to the point where he's a guy that can get you a basket, which I don't know if he's going to get there this season, but this team's for real. This team's for real. I think
we've got a very interesting week coming up, Mike.
We do. No question about that. Two big games, the next two games, because we're 0-4 against these two teams.
Yep. Well, your co-host is going to be at the game tomorrow night.
All right. That's going to be a fun one, man.
Well, yeah, I'm taking Will and Jake to the first Cavs game. I said, fun. I'm going to take you to Giannis. That's what I said.
Is Giannis going to sit out?
There's no zero chance that he's going to sit out tomorrow.
I had a friend of mine text me about the Luka sit out. He said he had tickets. He wanted to go see Luka and... Of course, found out day of the game that he's not playing. So hopefully,
listen. What the heck is the Dallas? What the heck is the Dallas doing? This is like literally, we are the like Slovenian capital of the country. Well, literally, and then you sit him out. Should be ashamed of yourselves, Dallas.
I think that Dallas was looking at it and saying, even if Luka plays, that game's a schedule loss, because I think they were at home the night before. They beat Portland in kind of a tough, close game. And I think they looked at it and said, we're probably not going in there. We just got destroyed by the Cavs, whatever, two nights before in Dallas by like 19. I think they just looked at it as a schedule loss and said, all right, we're gonna sit them and get some rest. But that's the problem where you have a Western Conference team visiting an Eastern Conference team or vice versa, where that star only plays in that city one time. That should, I mean, again, the league, there's nothing they can do, right? Because teams talk about injuries and who knows? Who knows what's real, what's not? So there's not a whole lot they can do. But in those East-West matchups where it's the only time a guy is coming to a city, it seems like the league should do as much as humanly possible to make sure that those stars are on the floor when they're going in these cross-conference games. And I know you can't control it completely, and I know the teams can do whatever they want to massage the injury lists, but it's just not a good look when you have a star that only comes to a city once a year and he doesn't play. That's just – it's not fair. It doesn't look good for the league. It's a problem.
I completely and utterly agree with you, Mike. It is a major problem, and they need to fix it. I don't know what the answer is, Mike.
No, there isn't one. I mean, there isn't one because what are you going to say? Like, the league can't come in and say, well, this guy's healthy. How do you do that? You're just not – the players can say, look, my ankle hurts or I got a pulled stomach muscle or whatever. I just don't know how you legislate that out of the game. I think it's really hard. And obviously the league can mandate and talk about we want players to play and – the load management piece. I know they've tried to address it, but there's not really much that can happen from a league standpoint. I think, forget who I was listening to. They were talking about just how, despite the fact that there's all this load management, that guys are obviously still getting hurt. We'll talk about some injuries as we go forward here, but I don't think that there's anything you can do about the injuries. And I don't think there's anything that you can do about load management. It just feels like both of those things, load management's here to stay, and I'm not sure that it's having a tremendous impact on injuries. Now, maybe it has an impact on how well guys play because they're getting extra rest, maybe compared to somebody who in the past was playing 82 games. And I do think that the demands that the game today places on a player's body just because of the amount of space that you have to cover compared to, let's say, in the 80s where guys weren't spreading the floor in the same way. I think players move and cover a lot more distance in a game than they ever have. But it's just, there's not really anything that the league can do. I don't think there's any way that they can force teams to play guys who the team claims are injured or the player themselves is saying they're injured. I don't know what the league can do about that. They can continue to make strong statements. They can continue to lobby behind the scenes to make sure players are playing. But ultimately, if players are going to sit,
you could do what the Heat does. Yeah, and fail to report someone's injury, and then the next day you put everyone on the injury list.
A little sarcasm from the Heat. I give the Heat credit for that. I kind of like that. I kind of.
I thought it was pretty good.
I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
All right, are we looking at the schedule for the next week?
Yeah, let's go. Cavs, okay. Home tomorrow for the Bucks. It's a loss.
Nah, you're going to win that game.
Oh, okay.
You're going to win that game because you're 0-2 against Milwaukee. You're at home. I think you come out. I think you come out and you take that as a. I think that's a big game for the Cavs. I think it's a big game. I think that if you're really going to stamp yourself as a real contender, that you have to come out and play well against Milwaukee after going 0-2 and really being non-competitive in those two games in Milwaukee. So I think they win that one.
Okay. I like you. I like what you're saying. I like what you're saying, Mike. I do. All right. Home Friday against the Raptors. That's a win.
Toronto's been playing terrible and felt like we, in both games that we played them up in Toronto, the opening night, and then, I don't know, that was like 2 weeks ago, they just shot the lights out against us in that second game for sure. First game, obviously, Garland goes out. I think Cavs win that one. And then the one that I think is the most dicey, crazy to say, but Brooklyn. I think at home you win it. I'm saying this, they're going to go 3-0.
I'm saying 2-1.
Which one are they going to lose? You think they're going to lose Milwaukee?
I think they're going to lose Milwaukee.
So beat Toronto, beat Brooklyn. Oh, look, all three of those would be good wins.
For sure. For sure.
If you can win that one, though, things look pretty good going forward until you go out west after the first of the year. So two away games, Indiana and Chicago, two winnable, very winnable road games. So you can put together a nice streak. This December should have been a good month for the Cavs. I mean, they took a couple of losses. The loss to New York, I think, was a bad one, and the loss at home against Sacramento, and the loss at San Antonio. They lost three games that, in my opinion, they shouldn't have lost this month. So at least they're right in the ship at home.
Let's talk a little. We're going to go a little potpourri now, Mike. I'm going to start with your favorite topic, Anthony Davis injuries. Are you surprised?
No, I'm not surprised. I think clearly anybody who watches the NBA, anybody who's a Lakers fan or not a Lakers fan, you just knew that at some point Davis was going to go down. It's been his history over the last 5-6 years that he's not going to play anywhere near 82 games, and he's going to go down. He's going to miss significant time. And look, the Lakers, I mean, obviously the huge speculation all over everywhere is, what are they going to do? Are they going to trade Westbrook? Are they going to trade those two number one picks, 27 and 29? Are they going to try to deal some of their smaller role players for a role player or a little slightly better player that might have a better fit? But now if you're the Lakers, you have to look at it and you say, okay, even if you get, what's the best haul you can get for Westbrook and those two number one picks? There's nobody out there who's available that can come to the Lakers.
I think the Bulls are the situation with all the nonsense that's going on right now. Did you see the report?
Levine is not happy. I don't know what else was in the report.
They just had a major dust up at halftime with Levine.
Okay,
it was a major dust up. And tempers were flared. Tempers fired up at halftime. Now, what does that mean? I don't know.
Is that between Billy Donovan and Zach LaVine, or is that amongst players and Zach LaVine?
Players and Zach LaVine.
Well, the Bulls are a mess, okay? So let's start there. But I don't care who you take from the Bulls. You want to give the Lakers DeRozan? You want to give the Lakers LaVine? You want to give the Lakers Vucevic? I don't know who you want to give them, but do any of those guys AD-list Lakers into anything more than the play-in?
No, there's nothing there.
So if you're the Lakers, we talked about it last week, but you have this conundrum. You have the three options. You have the two number ones in Westbrook for a, quote, star. So maybe you deal that for DeRozan. Is he a high enough level star to be able to get that package from the Lakers? Or you have the Kendrick Nunn, Patrick Beverley, one number one pick for Kuzma. That's a trade that's been thrown out there, or a player like Kuzma at that level, who's not an all-star player, but a guy who maybe is an upgraded role player. And then you have the last option, which is you look at what you have on your team. You have Westbrook's contract expiring at the end of the season. And then you have another number one pick this summer that becomes eligible to be traded. And you have Westbrook's salary slot where you can now go out and maybe chase another really good free agent. But again, a year from now, LeBron's a year older, AD's a year older. Neither one of those guys has shown in the last 4 years that they can play consistently over 82 games and not get hurt. LeBron obviously hasn't gotten a major injury yet this year, but he's been nicked up and missed some games. I don't know what the path forward is. If I'm the Lakers, I don't do anything. I mean, I don't make any trades. I don't trade those picks out because, look, the Lakers can always rebuild and retool, right? It's the glamour franchise in the league. Every player wants to go live in LA. The Lakers are always going to be able to attract free agents. So let's say that this season ends and the Lakers want to retool. You trade LeBron to the Cavs, right? That's what you're hoping for, that LeBron somehow makes his way to Cleveland or wherever he goes. And you just retool. And the Lakers certainly can do that. They have the glamour. They have the cachet to be able to do that. And that's what I would do if I was LA. I think making these small incremental picks that maybe push you into the play-in, for what? You can say that they have a puncher's chance, but they don't have a puncher's chance of making it to the NBA Finals with this team. There's just no way. They don't have enough depth. They don't have enough. They're just not good enough. And I would not trade those draft picks if I was the Lakers, because I would rather put myself in a position where, if we're going to transition away from this current iteration of the team, which means you're going to transition away from, for sure, LeBron, and who knows, maybe AD as well, you're always going to be able to get players to come to the Lakers. And to me, to do a panic trade where you end up giving up some of your most valuable assets, not knowing what your team's going to look like in 5 years, to me, it doesn't seem like a rational move. Let's put it that way.
I mean, I don't disagree with you. I just don't think that I would be concerned if I am a Lakers fan that there's people that are going to come, like, people, the powers that be are going to force them to do something. If you get what I'm putting down.
But LeBron has way less leverage than he's ever had with both the Lakers and certainly with the Cavs, because he's signed for another season. So there's not really much that he can do in terms of putting pressure on them. And I mean, I guess, right, if you're LeBron, you don't care about what happens at 27 or 29. It makes no difference to you. You don't really care. But at the same time, if I was Rob Pelinka or I was Jeannie Buss, I'd be having the conversation of, look, we're only going to be able to get incrementally better this season, but if we hold on to this salary slot when Westbrook comes off our books and we hold on to those draft picks, now in the summer we may be able to do something big that really could move the needle. And again, because you're the Lakers, you're just going to have more guys that are willing to entertain being traded or signing than you would any other franchise in the league. And so I know it's tough. I know LeBron probably doesn't want to say, hey, I'm just going to bite the bullet and eat this season. But I think to do anything else, to me, is short-sighted, because this team's not going to win a title. I don't care what trades or what they do in season. That's not going to happen. I think it's questionable whether they can even make the play-in. You look at the 10 teams right now in both conferences that are in either the top six seeds or in the play-in. I'm not so sure that with the injuries to Steph and with the state of the Lakers, I'm not so sure that the West, those aren't the 10 teams, and same thing in the East. I think you could make a pretty compelling case that the 10 teams in each conference that are in the play-in and the top six seeds, I think you can make a pretty compelling case that those are going to be the teams at the end of the season.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, that's completely fair, Mike, and I don't disagree with you. I just think that somehow, some way, something's going to happen. Just because
I'm not saying something's not going to happen. I'm just saying I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. And if I was the Lakers, I would be trying to convince LeBron why not doing anything during this season is the better move, and why you're better off waiting to the summer where you have that cap space, another pick becomes eligible to be traded, and now you can go out and see what's really out there. I don't know who's going to be available mid-season that can make a difference. I guess we don't know for sure yet, but I'd argue the answer is nobody. And who knows what this AD foot injury is, right? They haven't really come out and said exactly what's going on with his foot, so...
What? No way. No one's ever not told us what's going on. What are you talking about, Mike? It's just a mild injury.
And he'll have another mild injury 2 weeks after he gets back, so...
I know. I was being facetious, Mike. I'm sure you know that.
Prayers up for Anthony Davis, man. Hopefully he can get back battle and remain through. Healthy at some point. Yeah, battle through at some point. Look, I don't think the Lakers... I don't see them passing any of the teams that are above them.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
Golden State got destroyed tonight by the Knicks, and I know that Poole had a big game the other night, but I don't see them being able to hang on without Steph for any length of time here. I think they're going to drop down in the standings. Look, they should be able to stay ahead of Oklahoma City, but I think the 10 teams that are in the West, I think those are the 10 teams to me. I think Golden State, I mean... They're going to be in trouble after this month without Steph, and then who knows what it looks like when he comes back.
I mean, because he's not going to be healthy.
Right, that's what I'm saying. And they've been abysmal on the road. I don't know. I think the 10 teams that are there in the West are going to be the 10 teams that are there at the end in whatever order.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so then speaking
let's
of...
Stay in the West.
Stay in the West. Yeah. The Pelicans struggling, Mike. Your team of destiny, struggling a bit.
Got to the top of the Western Conference and immediately decided, let's just go ahead and lose some games. And they haven't played well since they got to 18-8. Now they're 18-12. And look, I still think that they're going to be right there. They're still very good. So you figure they lost two games away to the Jazz, which, look, we just saw the Jazz didn't look very good against the Cavaliers, but we know that they've overachieved throughout the season. Then they go to Phoenix in that sort of revenge game, and then they lose to arguably the best team in the league, the Bucks. So it's 3 out of 4 on the road, then come home from Milwaukee. All those losses are probably, I don't know if excusable is the right word, but this team still is missing Brandon Ingram. And I think when you put them together and make them whole, I still think that when you look at the West, other than the fact that they're inexperienced, other than the playoff series last year, which Zion didn't participate in, so he's never played a playoff minute in his career, which is concerning when you start talking about a team trying to make a deep playoff run. But this team, I still think, is as good as anybody out there in the Western Conference, but it remains to be seen. And obviously, Zion has to stay healthy. And you got to get Ingram back. When this team's at full strength, they're a formidable offensive team. And as we've chronicled before, their defense has been, I think they're still top five in the league. So if that sustains, then they've got a chance. They've got a chance because Zion still, I think if you put the ball in his hands and he stays in good shape for the rest of the season, not many teams have too many answers for what he can do. And then you combine that with McCollum shooting and Ingram's mid-range game and Jonas down in the post and just all the different lineup options that they have. This team is going to be a really good playoff team if their inexperience doesn't hurt them when push comes to shove next, whatever, May, June.
I just don't know. Listen, I know that Zion's been healthy, and I hope that he continues to be able to play, but they gotta figure this out while he's, while he is healthy. They need to win these games.
Losing four in a row after you get to the top of the West was not what they were hoping to do. But again, you look at the Western Conference, the Warriors right now are 5.5 games out of the number one seed. So you're basically you're basically looking at, you go on a 3 or 4 game winning streak and you're jumping up in the standings. I think last week when we talked, Phoenix was like 6th and they won 3 in a row and now they're 3rd. So
yeah.
Who knows? When you look at which of the 6 teams that you see in the top that are in the top 6 right now, which of those teams do you like the best right now at the moment?
The Nuggets.
That's what I would probably say too, but the Nuggets are the 27th ranked defense. I saw something on Twitter today. It said it had the last 10 NBA champions, and the lowest defensive rank was somebody was 11th. Can't remember. I know the Cavs, the 2016 Cavs were 10th, and of course they were kind of cruising through the regular season, but the Nuggets are 27th. So they got to figure out defensively what they're doing. Offensively, they're just ridiculous when everybody's healthy. Jokic, he's as good as he's been in either one of his MVP seasons. We all know about the game he had the other night with 40, 27, and 10 numbers that have not been seen since Wilt. Anytime you get mentioned with this hasn't happened since Wilt, you can be pretty sure that you did something fairly impressive. So he just continues to be phenomenal. I mean, he's going to be right there for the MVP. He probably doesn't win it just because winning the MVP 3 times in a row just doesn't happen very often. But he's going to be right there. I think the key with Denver is Murray's got to continue to progress. He's still not back to anywhere near the level he was pre-injury. And then Michael Porter Jr. has been in and out of the lineup. And they can't win without him just because of his ability to shoot the ball and space the floor and do the things that he does. They need him on the floor to be able to score and space the floor. So I still think that I like Denver the best out of all those teams. I guess Memphis probably would be a close second for me. I don't trust Phoenix. New Orleans, I think they're inexperienced. I still think they could do it. I still think that if they're healthy going into the playoffs, they're a team that nobody will want to play, and I wouldn't be surprised if they make it to the finals. The Clippers, you can't take seriously because those two guys are not going to be able to play for 2 straight months in the NBA playoffs every other day. It's just not happening. And obviously, Sacramento is not ready to win a title. And then you look down, Portland, Utah, Minnesota, Dallas. None of those teams are championship teams. Luka is a championship player, but that roster around him, after watching them twice this week, I guess if they're hitting threes, they can win games, but Dallas has got to figure something out because if you're Luka, it's not going to be long before he starts looking around going, what am I doing here? And can I win? Now, he might like playing that way now when he's 23 years old and everything goes through him, but in another year or two when he looks around and says, hey, I got to start winning titles, the roster just is not there for Dallas.
All right. Anything else in the West, Mike?
No, I think we hit everything. Let's go to the East.
Eastern Conference. I don't think there's as much to talk about in the East. We'll start with the Celtics are struggling a little bit, which is a sight for sore eyes. I like to see them struggle, Mike. I like to see them. They've lost 2 straight, but they played bad against the Lakers, and they pulled that one out of their butt. Didn't they have like a huge lead? Last week when we were recording, right?
Yeah, they had a huge lead, and then they were down like 13 in the fourth quarter, though, and came back. So they had a huge lead, blew that lead, and then got down big in the fourth quarter and ended up making a comeback, turned out with the way they're playing, it turned out to be a big win for them.
And because Magic won on Friday,
Then they lost the Magic on, was it Sunday? No. Yeah, they lost the Magic again on Sunday.
Yep.
And then they didn't play tonight, right? No, they play tomorrow. I'm guessing they play the Pacers tomorrow night. Go Pacers. We're going to root for the Pacers tomorrow night.
Everybody thought when Rob Williams came back that that was going to just unlock another gear, and unfortunately that has not
been. And when you look in the Eastern Conference, the top seven teams are all on the win streak, and then there's the Celtics that are lost two in a row. So obviously the win streaks are going to come to an end tomorrow because Cavs play Milwaukee. So one of those two teams is going to – their win streak is going to come to an end. And then I think – who does Brooklyn play tomorrow night? Brooklyn playing tomorrow night? Brooklyn's off again tomorrow? Really? Man, they're – oh, no, they play the Warriors tomorrow night. That's a win. They're going to win that game. The Warriors are terrible. They're pitiful. They were pitiful tonight, the Warriors. So,
yeah, like, they lost by what? 40 almost to the Knicks. Yeah, they were bad.
So they're not going to beat the Nets. So
I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Celtics. Am I
really concerned with the Celtics' longevity? No, I think they started the season off really, really well. They hit a little bump in the row, but it's just a matter of how are they going to fix it and what's going to happen going forward. Is Joe M on the hot seat yet?
I would guess no.
Yeah.
As long as Tatum and Brown are healthy, Boston's going to win a lot of games. And Tatum sat out the second of that back-to-back with Orlando, so you can't be that concerned, although that's a game. It's interesting the number of times that teams have sat guys and then they end up losing those games that they kind of think they should win. It speaks to the depth in the league. I mean, it speaks to the fact that even these bad teams have good players and are competitive. I think the back end of the league is as good as it's ever been in terms of these bad teams. If you don't come to play, they're going to beat you. Like,
look at the New York Knicks.
Yeah, right, exactly. Knicks have won 8 in a row. It's crazy.
And then Washington tonight. Crazy. Washington came, beat the Suns tonight, right? Yeah. So it's like
it makes yeah. There's a lot of results that kind of make limited sense. Let's put it that way.
Honestly, when you look at the Cavs' losses this year, Mike.
Yep.
We spent time talking about the Cavs already, but like, what games really, like, should they have not lost? Because even Sacramento has played well this year, so like, I'm not terribly upset about the two losses against Sacramento. We should have won those games. Okay. Same thing with the first Toronto team, but.
You got to beat Sacramento at home. So, okay, let's just go through. Let's go through all the losses to the Cavs, all the Cavs losses quickly, right? Okay? Let me make sure I got – let me get the whole schedule pulled up here.
Toronto was the first loss. That's not a terrible loss.
Away from home, opening night, Garland gets hurt. Not a terrible loss.
Yeah.
Then they go on a big winning streak, and they're out west, and – we can go back to that Clippers, the turning moment with 3 minutes to go in that Clippers game. That's a game that, in the context of that game, they should have won that game. But losing to the Clippers, I guess, wasn't that surprising. The loss at Sacramento, again, Sacramento's good. You're on the road. I don't think you should lose. The Warriors, again, are good at home. So they've 12-2, I think, at home. Then you come home from Minnesota. That was a game Mitchell sat out, which, again, I think the Cavs thought, we can win this game without Mitchell, and then they ended up losing. Then they go to Milwaukee. So they lost twice to Milwaukee on the road. You lost that second Toronto game on the road. Toronto shot the heck out of the ball. The loss at New York was bad because they played pitifully and didn't shoot the ball well. The loss at home to Sacramento was bad. And the last three losses they've had, in my opinion, are bad losses. Everything else you kind of –
Maybe excuse
or rationalize, but you can't lose to Sacramento at home. You can't lose to San Antonio anywhere. And that loss at New York, that was the day before the Knicks had lost by like 45 to the Thunder. So I guess the Knicks were motivated, but that's a game you can't lose if you're the Cavs. You got to win that game.
Okay.
But we could go through every team's schedule, right? I mean, every night there's some surprising loss that, like tonight, as you said, Washington beats Phoenix. Like, if you're Phoenix, you're like, what is going on? Why are we losing at home to the Wizards?
Apparently, Bridges and Ayton were arguing with each other tonight, too. So, which I don't know if that comes as much of a surprise or not, but they didn't
Ayton,
get
a... Ayton must have some issues, man. There's something going on there.
You think?
It's got to. There's something weird there. I don't know what it is, but who knows? All right, stay in the East. Brooklyn obviously has righted the ship, and they've had kind of a little bit of a soft schedule. Let's face it, a big piece of the Nets' success recently has been KD and what he's been doing. He's averaging like 30 a game, and he's been really good defensively. He's averaging the most minutes of any guy in the league, which just doesn't really seem feasible or sustainable or very smart from the Nets' perspective. But this team has, clearly, they have talent. Durant is one of the 15 best players ever. And when Kyrie is right, we know how good he can be. I think the big thing is that nobody really believes that this team is going to be able to play functional basketball for the remainder of the season. And if you're going to continue to pile 37 minutes a game on Durant, I just don't know that he can sustain that pace. And clearly, it's only a matter of time before the next Kyrie situation occurs, whether that's something off the court or whether that's an injury. And Simmons, since he's come back from injury, hasn't looked nearly as good. It seemed like he was maybe starting to round into form a little bit before he got hurt again and sat out. Now, since he's been back, he's, I don't know, like, I don't know what to make of what Simmons is right now in the moment. And I surely don't know what to make of what he can be going forward. I think his days of being an elite player are gone.
Yeah. Mike, did you see what they were doing to Kyrie the other night in Minnesota when he was shooting free throws?
No, I did not.
They're putting up Happy Hanukkah.
They were spinning some dreidels for him.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty comical.
Look, that whole thing obviously was a mess, and Kyrie made his own bed in that situation. I don't think anybody trusts him to stay drama-free for the remainder of the season. And even though the Nets have had a nice run, and they're clearly talented, but, and I wouldn't be excited to play against Durant and Kyrie in a playoff series, but for this team to be considered a legitimate title contender, which is what they thought they were going to be when they put this group together, I don't see that happening. Durant playing 37 minutes a game isn't
it's not sustainable.
That's not sustainable. He's either going to get hurt or he just isn't going to be as effective. He's going to wear down because they're asking him to carry so much of the load right now offensively.
Yep, I agree. I agree, Mike.
The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast and Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered.
All right. So then I guess my next thing is, Mike, do you have anything else in the Eastern Conference that you want to highlight before we wrap up tonight?
Two things quick. So the New York Knicks, right? 1-8 in a row, and they've taken...
Are you a believer, Mike?
No, I'm not a believer. I mean, I think, look, the Knicks are better. Brunson, bringing in Jalen Brunson, you could say what you want about his contract. You could say what you want about, is he the right guy to lead your team to the greatest heights of NBA playoff success? But as far as him coming in and being a guy that has stabilized that environment and just gave that ship a rudder, I think that Brunson's been everything that the Knicks could have hoped for and more. And so they've played well over the last, whatever, 2 weeks, and they won 8 in a row. The East is just like the West. There's this middle group of teams that I don't really know what to make of them and who really slots where. So the Knicks, whatever, 2 weeks ago were on the verge of being down outside the play-in, and now they're in the sixth spot. I don't expect them to hold that sixth spot, although I guess when you look behind them, I'm not sure which of those teams that you really believe in. I mean, the only teams you could potentially say could replace the Knicks would be the Hawks, Heat, and Raptors, all of which have had numerous problems to varying degrees of seriousness through the first part of the season. So maybe, who knows, maybe the Knicks can stay in six, but I think they've played well, but this isn't a team that is, I don't think they're a threat to even win a first round playoff series. They're not going to beat any of whatever combination of four teams, whether Brooklyn stays there or whether Philly eventually gets there. I don't think the Knicks are better than any of the five teams ahead of them in the standings. And then the last thing I'll say is the same thing I said in the West. I think when you look at the Eastern Conference, it's hard to imagine that the 10 teams that are currently in either the playoffs or the play-in, that they're not going to be the 10 teams. Because you look at the five bottom teams in the East. Detroit, they are not climbing out of the bottom five. Charlotte is not climbing out of the bottom five. I think Orlando is the one team that, as the season goes on, now look, Orlando wants to lose for probably one more season and give themselves one more shot at getting another guy to add to the nucleus. But they have a good team in terms of just the talent level. And for the first time, if you're an Orlando Magic fan, I think you can kind of start to see what this team could be. And I won't be surprised if they play much better as the season goes along. And maybe they don't end up in the play-in because they don't want to, but I'd much rather be, of all five of those teams at the bottom, I would much rather be the Orlando Magic than any of those other teams. But I still don't see the Magic climbing up into the play-in just because of what they want to do. I think they'll probably end up sitting guys out or whatever to make sure that they stay down there near the bottom because they want one more crack at the lottery. Bulls are going to blow it up, right? And the Wizards aren't climbing out of that bottom group. So I think the 10 teams that are there right now are the 10 teams arguably in both conferences that are going to stay there. Maybe the Warriors, right? Maybe the Warriors, if Steph comes back and he's healthy, maybe the Warriors climb out of the last spot and bump somebody in the West. But in the East, I don't know who. Maybe Indiana falls on their face, but Halliburton's been so good, and the Pacers have some good professional basketball players, so I don't see them completely falling off, and Mathurin's going to continue to get better. So I think these are the 10 teams.
Not to mention they have a good coach. They have a good coach,
exactly.
Too, Mike.
Exactly. These are the 10, so. These are the 10 teams.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And once again, we go back to the fact that the Pacers have surprised us, but we shouldn't have underestimated them when it comes to knowing who their head coach was, in my opinion. We should have known, right?
And Halliburton, we should have known. Yeah, Carlisle is one of the best coaches in the league, and Indiana has never been a team that has willingly tanked. They've always continued to want to try to be competitive, maybe sometimes to their own detriment of kind of staying in the middle. But the combination of sort of the Pacers franchise ethos of wanting to compete, Rick Carlisle being a really good coach, and then Halliburton just taking another step forward from even what people thought he was going to be coming out of last season, all those things have combined. And all that being said, they're one game below 500. So they've played above expectations, but I'm guessing that they've probably maxed out in terms of, I think if they finish 500, they'd be probably happy with that in terms of the players and the coaching staff. maybe not the franchise. The franchise might rather be worse. I don't know. I'm not sure where which direction they're going to go. Who knows?
Who knows? All right, Mike.
I think that's it.
Anything else you? I listen. The Browns are who we thought they were. This is what they're going to do. They're just going to do this crap, and we're going to finish one game out of the playoffs because of the fact that they lost all the tiebreakers to all the teams. The end. They're going to finish a game or two out and when they should have been in the playoffs because they lost that
Detroit game. My Detroit Lions are going to make the playoffs, though.
Oh, there's a good chance. There is a good chance of that happening.
I'm excited about that. There hasn't been a Lions playoff game in a while, so I'm excited for a Lions playoff game.
It'll be exciting for you.
Well, it should be a fun week of sports because we have both basketball and football on Christmas Day. We have the Browns play on Christmas Eve, if I'm not mistaken. So there will be lots of sports to be had here for us in Cleveland over the next couple days. Yep. So, all right, that being said, to everyone out there, happy holidays. Thanks for joining us on this edition of the Hoop Heads Pod. We'll look forward to rejoining you next week. I believe, let me think about this. I think next week on Tuesday, I will be in Florida. So we'll be broadcasting remotely from an undisclosed location.
Or do we try, when do you guys leave for Florida?
Well, I don't know. I'm considering that the team plays on the 27th and I haven't really booked my trip at all. So I don't really know. So,
well, let me throw this idea out to you.
Okay.
If you're down, Christmas night we record after the Christmas games.
Oof, I don't know. We'll see. I got to get up. I don't know. It depends on what time because I'm going to probably fly out on the 26th. So I don't know. That could be dicey. I think I'd rather just do it on our normal night because I might be just sitting in a hotel room by myself on Tuesday night. So,
is your wife not going on the trip?
Not. Nobody's going.
Oh my God! Oh, I was thinking it was going to be a hard.
It'll be easy. It'll be easy. We'll be able to start whatever time we want. So, should be good. Man. It could be good. You could, as soon as your kids are in bed, we can start recording. So, all right. Nobody wants to hear our logistical podcasting analysis here. So let's leave it there. Thanks to everyone for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.